The Richard M. Fairbanks Foundation is working to strengthen Indianapolis. We address our city's biggest challenges and opportunities.
And the Fairbanks Foundation does it by helping to put big money into educational programs, like Catapult.
After I took the Catapult program, I had many promotions at where I'm currently at through advanced manufacturing, and I definitely took many skills from it to help me succeed for today.
From doing the program, now I'm certified for life in advanced manufacturing and lean manufacturing, and that's what companies are looking for today. I doubled my salary from the Catapult program.
Catapult, just one example of the Richard M. Fairbanks Foundation making an everlasting impact in Indianapolis. Meet the woman behind the Fairbanks mission, President and CEO Claire Fidian Green, on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast. Hello and welcome to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. I'm Gary Dick. Dick Fairbanks was a broadcast pioneer in Indianapolis for more than 50 years, an innovator in radio and television. His company owned and operated more than 20 stations around the country.
With just two turns to go, Marcus Erickson on his heels. Newgarden in the turn number four.
Erickson looks to the inside, looks to the outside. Newgarden has a two-car length lead.
Advance Auto Park, twin checkered flag in the air. It's a battle at the start-finish line, and Joseph Newgarden will win the Indianapolis 500-mile race.
You can thank Dick Fairbanks for being able to hear those exciting calls every May. He founded the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. Fairbanks also had a passion for giving back to the city where he grew up. He set up a foundation in his name in 1986. And nearly 40 years later, the Richard M. Fairbanks Foundation has awarded more than $300 million in funding to advance the vitality of Indianapolis. And I am pleased to be joined by Claire Fidian Green. Claire is the CEO of the Richard M. Fairbanks Foundation here in Indianapolis. Claire, welcome.
Thank you so much, Gary. Great to be with you.
Yeah, you know, and I was looking on some of the research, 9 years. I remember when you were named CEO. Doesn't seem like it's been 9 years, but it has, right?
It's gone by so fast, Gary. I work with great people. I have an awesome board, great team, and we get to support so many great organizations in our community. It's been really fun.
You know, the Fairbanks Foundation is such an important organization for Indianapolis and for our state. Talk about, give people an idea of what the Richard M. Fairbanks Foundation is all about, kind of the focus areas for funding as well.
Sure. So, yeah, the Richard M. Fairbanks Foundation was established in 1986 by Richard Fairbanks. He went by Dick Fairbanks. So he was a business owner. He owned radio and cable stations, and he thought it was really important to leave his wealth to benefit the city of Indianapolis, where his family had prospered for generations. So that was his idea while he was still alive, and then he passed away in 2000, and his estate settled into the foundation. So it really began making larger grants about 20 years ago. We have three focus areas: education, health, and the vitality of Indianapolis. And our geographic scope for kind of boots on the ground work is Indianapolis, but we do statewide policy and research work as well.
Give us some ideas. We want to zero in on one new initiative that I think is very important for our state and workforce and talent and some of these big issues facing our state. But talk about some of the programs and initiatives that the Fairbanks Foundation has been involved with over the years.
Sure. So there are a couple of legacy grantees that we have that Mr. Fairbanks named while he was still alive. He was a lifetime trustee of Butler University. And so that's one of our legacy grantees. One of a recent grant that we just awarded to them was $13 million in support of their new sciences complex. We have provided other grants to them in the past, but there was just a groundbreaking for that recently, and it just opened up actually last year. So that's an example. Another is the Virginia B. Fairbanks Art and Nature Park at Newfields. That's also a legacy organization, and that was named in honor of Mr. Fairbanks' second wife, Virginia, who was a lover of gardens. So the Arden Nature Park is named after her, and we funded things. For example, they've just expanded the parking to access that park, and that just opened up very recently. So that's an example of the kind of support that we're able to provide through funding to them. In terms of some newer initiatives, we just wrapped up a four-year, $13 million initiative called Prevention Matters, and that was designed to help schools in Marion County select and implement evidence-based substance use prevention programs. This was started at the height of the opioid crisis when that was becoming, you know, folks were talking about that and concern about that. So that's an initiative that we have funded. And then more recently, we just launched a $15 million initiative called College Matters, which is designed to help schools in Marion County help more of their students successfully complete the FAFSA and enroll in college.
I know the Fairbanks Foundation is involved in a really important, and I think what will be an increasingly high profile initiative. And it's around apprenticeships, right? Which really gets to the heart of the workforce issue that's facing really all industries in the state, all areas of the state of Indiana. Samet's iLab is the initiative. So Claire, there's a lot to talk about here. Explain what this Samet's iLab initiative is all about.
Yes. So we first learned about the Swiss youth apprenticeship system going back to 2016. We've been funding work to help share the learnings about that system and then more intensively learned about it starting in 2019. CMETS is short for the Center on Economics and Management of Education and Training Systems at ETH Zurich, which is one of the top universities in the world, located in Zurich, Switzerland. They've established this institute to help teach other countries about the Swiss system. It's widely considered the gold standard. 70% of young people in Switzerland go into a 3 or 4 year apprenticeship starting after the ninth grade. Their compulsory school ends in ninth grade. In the 10th grade, 70% do an apprenticeship. The other 30% go on to a traditional college route. So we've been learning about it since then, funding folks to go over to Switzerland to see the system. And then a pilot launched here in Indianapolis in 2020, as well as the statewide community of practice. So right now there are 5 pilot sites across Indiana, over 400 youth apprentices, 50 employer partners, and 30 school partners involved to date.
Wow. So this indeed is underway and catching on. Talk about the whole apprenticeship idea. This is not new here in Indiana, right? But it sounds like it's beginning to really get traction. How far does this interest in apprenticeships go back?
Yeah. So I think that there has been a long time interest in better connecting students with the workforce starting earlier on. Not only does that help them become aware of the available careers, but it's also a way to help retain them in our state. We want to retain our talent here and better meet the needs of employers who've long struggled to fill roles that they have. And that's gotten more acute since the pandemic and really is projected to get worse because of the demographic challenges we're facing with baby boomers retiring, et cetera. So really an apprenticeship is not new as a concept. It's been around for a very long time. We have apprenticeships in this country. We don't have very many for young people starting in high school. And that's what's so interesting about the Swiss system. Many European countries, the UK, Australia, others have apprenticeship programs. The Swiss one is really special though, because you can do an apprenticeship, but then if you change your mind and want to go to the academic route and get a college degree, that's easy and possible to do. And that's what we like about their system so much. It really gives a lot of opportunities to young people, not only when they're in high school, but throughout their careers to upskill, change their minds, go into different career paths and earn a great wage.
Talk about the importance of the initiative, the Samet's iLab initiative, especially in light of the statistics we've heard a lot about in terms of, I think it's 2/3 of the jobs, the future jobs are going to require education, certificates, whatever that 4-year degree, whatever it is, beyond high school. But right now, Indiana doesn't hit those numbers.
That's right. Yeah. So the latest projections are that by 2031, more than 70% of jobs will require some form of education or training after high school. That can be a 4-year or 2-year degree. It can also be a skills-based program like an apprenticeship. And we are pretty far from meeting that mark in Indiana and also the rest of the country. We're not unique in that. So what's so exciting about the iLab and what's different about it is we have these pilot programs, but we only have about 400 students, 50 employers, 30 school partners. There is huge need all over the state. And so we've brought together a coalition of business, government, K-12, and higher education leaders across our entire state to go deep in a few key sectors where there's some really acute talent shortages and figure out how do we actually take these programs and grow them to scale. So have thousands of students instead of just hundreds of students that are participating in these programs across our state.
In terms of kind of an evolving change in the culture, I guess, as you look at four-year degrees versus two-year degrees, associate degrees, certifications, those types of things, is there a coming realization in Indiana that, you know, four-year degrees, incredibly important, but they aren't the end all to be all, right? You've got opportunities that exist for other kinds of degree attainment.
That's absolutely right. And if you look at our completion statistics right now in our country and including in Indiana, only roughly 30% of each graduating high school class goes on to earn either a two or a four-year degree. That leaves 70% who might have enrolled but didn't complete or never went to post-secondary education in the first place. So I explained earlier about our $15 million College Matters initiative to try to help get more students in Marin County to complete the FAFSA and enroll in college. College will always be important, but we have to create another great pathway to better connect young people with careers and help them get the skills that they need to actually qualify for those skills. And so you're really creating more pathways that better connect students with future career opportunities and meet the needs of Hoosier employers.
Okay, talk about maybe dive down into some more specifics on the CMETS iLab initiative and how it will work. As you mentioned earlier, you're really getting into the high schools, right, and starting this at an earlier age. So talk about how this initiative is really going to unfold.
Yeah, so when you think of the term apprenticeship in this country, that has mostly meant construction or the trades. And we actually have really well-established, wonderful apprenticeship programs in those fields, and that's wonderful. And we need more folks to go into those apprenticeships. In Switzerland, I mentioned that 70% of young people do an apprenticeship, either a 3 or 4 year paid apprenticeship starting in the 10th grade. And that cuts across every single sector of the economy, banking, insurance, life sciences, advanced manufacturing, in addition to construction and the trades. So that's what we're trying to create here. We welcome the fact that there are construction and the trades apprenticeships. We need more of those. We need more people to enroll in them. But what we're trying to do is create these other apprenticeships. And if you want to think about what an apprenticeship really means, it's a combination of learning on the job and getting related instruction in school. So you're getting both of those and coming out after the 3 or 4 year apprenticeship, not only well-prepared to take a job right away, but also equipped to then go in whatever direction you'd like to go in based off of your interests and the needs in the labor market.
As you look at the support for this, and the initiative has a governing committee and industry committees all set up, and looking at the list of people involved, it's a who's who of the business community in Indiana. There clearly is support for this, you know, certainly on the participation in the initiative.
That's correct. I am just blown away by the level of support and the amount of hours that people who are very busy people, CEOs, heads of HR for their businesses, not to mention superintendents in K-12, presidents of colleges and universities. I think everyone knows that we have a talent shortage and we've got to figure out new solutions. So there's just been nothing but enthusiasm and cooperation of people who come to the table to say, okay, there's a model in Switzerland that we can apply and adapt in Indiana. And we don't have to create this from scratch. We can borrow from the best in the world and figure out how to make it work in our context. So yes, I'm just extraordinarily grateful to the leaders who have stepped up and are putting many, many hours into this initiative.
And this month is a big month, right? Later this month, you're going to have a big visit. Talk about that folks coming into the state and what the impact could be from that.
Yeah, so this has been a sprint, Gary. We launched in December. The committees really got going in January, and they've done two things. First of all, they've really taken time to learn in depth about the Swiss system and then talk about all the things that are already happening in Indiana. We have a lot of the pieces in place already, but what we don't have is a cohesive system. So they've been doing a lot of work across these different committees. We have a high school committee that's been looking, for example, at the high school schedule to say, how can we free up more time in the high school schedule to get 11th and 12th graders out of the building so they can go to work for employers? Transportation is a related challenge. And then the industry committee is helping them actually understand what is possible through this apprenticeship system. We've actually gone over to Switzerland twice so far this year, once with our banking and insurance employers. We just came back from a trip with our healthcare and life sciences employers. And we went deep in those sectors and visited with companies and organizations in Switzerland that are doing apprenticeship at scale so that we could see how it worked in those sectors and then figure out how that could work here. So all of that work has taken place. We have a big event at the end of April for 5 days. The leaders of summits at ETH Zurich are coming here and they are facilitating a conversation where each committee presents its recommendations. And then we start to knit together those disparate recommendations into a cohesive whole that will eventually be released in a final plan later this summer.
How about the acceptance of this idea, this concept? What are you seeing out there? It seems as though the business community is on board. What are you seeing from schools and families and other people?
Yeah, we haven't gotten to families yet beyond those whose children are already participating in the apprenticeship. In fact, we had a meeting in March where we had a couple parents accompany their apprentices and share, you know, why they've supported their students on this journey. Everyone who participates in it loves it. And that's been my experience so far with everyone who's joined the iLab. We're 120 people and counting who have joined this initiative, and everybody is supportive. Like I said earlier, a 2- and a 4-year college degree is still incredibly important, but that is not a pathway for every student. And it's also not what every company needs when they're looking to hire and find talent. So let's create another great pathway that is going to provide opportunity for young people and give them multiple pathways to their future career.
You have that whole concept of not meeting the needs of what employers want. Talk a little bit about that, if you would, because I think it's important and perhaps instructive. And that's what are businesses saying to you about this whole apprenticeship, you know, idea and the need for it? What's some of the commentary you're hearing?
Yeah, I mean, one example, we just came back from this trip with our healthcare and life sciences partners, and there are some acute needs in healthcare in particular for nursing. I think that's been in the headlines for a long time, lab technicians, other positions. And what we saw in Switzerland was that the apprenticeship pathway can be a pathway to those highly skilled jobs. Obviously, it doesn't end after your 3- or 4-year apprenticeship. That's the start when you're talking about something like a registered nurse. But these are ways of not only sparking interest in a young person in a career that they may not even be aware of or have considered when they're still in high school, and then providing them a structured way of actually upskilling to achieve that kind of employment, that kind of job. So again, I think employers are struggling, they have been struggling, and they're looking forward and thinking they're going to continue to struggle with some of their talent needs. So here's a model that works incredibly well in Switzerland. Let's adapt it. We already have pilots operating in Indiana, and we're trying to improve those pilots and make them better meet the needs of employers.
Are there other states that are going down this path as well in terms of apprenticeships?
Yeah, so really Indiana's model comes from the Colorado model. CareerWise Colorado was the first state that really launched something that was designed off of the Swiss system. There are other states there's a lot of work-based learning happening across the country. Wisconsin has an apprenticeship program, California, New York City. So they're happening all over. I think what's different about this one is the iLab approach has brought sectors across our entire state together, and we're trying to work together as one cohesive whole within these priority sectors to get something going that's going to get beyond the hundreds to the thousands of students.
Much more ahead with Claire Fidian-Green, the CEO of the Richard M. Fairbanks Foundation. We're talking apprenticeships. We'll also talk a bit about her path to the Fairbanks Foundation when the Business and Beyond podcast returns.
At PNC Bank, we're committed to making a difference in the lives of our customers and communities by helping them move forward financially. As a Main Street bank, we try to do right by our customers with every encounter. Our local teams offer personalized financial advice to help guide you in making the best decision. We're proud to be part of your community. PNC Bank, See how we can make a difference for you at PNC.com. Copyright 2022, the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. My guest this week, Claire Fidian Green, the president and CEO of the Richard M. Fairbanks Foundation. What does success look like? I know you're early in the initiative, early in the process now, but in terms of what is success, and as you kind of dream about what you'd like to see happen, what is that? What does it look like?
Well, what I would love is for more students to have a viable pathway that helps them enter a great career where they earn a livable wage. They stay here in Indiana and they meet the needs of employers. That will then encourage new employers to come to Indiana. It will help existing businesses expand. It is also a great place then for entrepreneurs to launch new businesses. So I really see this as a win for the students, a win for employers who can't find talent, a win for our economy, because it'll help strengthen our businesses, attract new businesses here, help grow new businesses. I also think it's a win for schools and higher education institutions. Our schools want the best for their students. And really the most structured pathway we have today is college. And since that's not a viable pathway for every student, I think the schools are eager to provide another great pathway for their students at scale. And then for higher ed institutions, the thing about the Swiss apprenticeship system I mentioned earlier on, that you can go back and forth between the vocational and the academic pathways. And they've done that in partnership with higher education in Switzerland. And that's why Sue Elsperman, the president of Ivy Tech, Ken Britt, chancellor at Marion University, we have got Purdue and IU as part of this initiative as well. I think they see this as a pathway for not only helping students in high school who didn't think they wanted to go to college, this can be a pathway to do that. It also is a pathway of bringing in folks who never were in the sphere of higher education, but they get a taste of it. And that's a pathway for them now through the apprenticeship system that it wouldn't have been there for them previously.
Could this be, in your view, a bit of a tipping point in terms of the whole workforce problem, the challenge facing Indiana and other states as well? It's been talked about for so long, and you know, there'll be multiple pieces of the solution, I'm sure. But as you look at this, I mean, I think, and you mentioned Purdue and IU, the recent announcement at Purdue and West Lafayette of the semiconductor SK Hynix, the South Korean company, 1,000 jobs. And there will be others in that very high-tech artificial intelligence area, you know, opportunities like that, big numbers of jobs that a lot of the jobs typically won't require a four-year degree, that this apprenticeship model can really play into that.
I completely agree with that, Gary. And that is certainly my hope for this iLab initiative, that we lay the groundwork for not only these sectors where we're focused, but the sectors that we haven't yet addressed and those that are coming, where there's going to be this huge need for skilled talent. And the thing that I really have enjoyed learning about the Swiss system is that there's a balance between employers and educators. In our system in Indiana, the rest of this country, we're very much an education-driven system. The Swiss system helps give a voice to employers. And what that means is that those skills-based training programs, the apprenticeship programs, can adapt real time to the talent needs of employers as new technology comes online, as their workforce needs change. Because the apprenticeship is a three-year paid experience, that person is in the workplace when they're in high school. And so any changes that are happening in the workplace, they're going through real time as they're learning how to do the job that they've been hired to do through the apprenticeship.
What do you need at this point? It's early in the process, obviously, but what are your needs? Is it more businesses to be engaged, business and industry, education institutions? What would you like to get more of at this point?
So once this plan comes out, we definitely are going to do a roadshow, and we will need more partners at the K-12 level, certainly with businesses. Without businesses, there is no apprenticeship system. So they are really the key. And then we need feedback to make sure that the recommendations and the plan that we've developed make sense. I think the key is we're trying to come up with output-oriented recommendations that are coordinated and cohesive. So that give kind of here's where you want to go, but then there's maximum flexibility in each community based off of who the employers are, what are their circumstances, what's the geography, is it rural, is it urban? We want to create recommendations that allows every student, every employer in our state that wants to participate a chance to participate.
Claire, we always like to give our listeners an idea of our guests, a little background on the guests. So I want to fire a couple of questions at you and your path to the Fairbanks Foundation. Again, as we mentioned earlier, you've been there 9 years. Path to get there, where did it all start for Claire Fittigan Green?
Completely serendipitous, Gary. I started off in management consulting in Boston, Massachusetts. I went to business school at Columbia Business School, and I got a summer internship at Eli Lilly and Company that led to a full-time job. And so that's how I got to Indiana. I also married a Hoosier, so that helped as well. And then after Lilly, I did some networking. I wanted to try something new and met Len Bentley, who was then the CEO and chairman of the Fairbanks Foundation. And he offered me a job. And honestly, Gary, I didn't know what a foundation was. But I decided to accept the job and I fell in love with the city of Indianapolis and all the wonderful people here doing wonderful work and fell in love with philanthropy. So that was how I got there. Initially, I was there for 4 years, got bitten by the education reform bug. So left to go to the Mind Trust and then the state of Indiana in both the Daniels and Pence administrations working in education policy. And then when Len Bentley retired from the foundation, I was honored to be offered the job of CEO and came back here in 2015.
What is it about Indianapolis that you know, it's one of those cities that people from outside move here? They may want to come or maybe they don't want to come, but once they get here, they stay. What is it about Indianapolis that makes it that kind of place?
It's a big city, but it's also small enough that you can find your people and you can find a way to make a difference and find a way to plug in. You know, I mentioned I came here to work in pharmaceuticals and somehow I ended up in philanthropy. There was never a plan that was not written down when I was 21. So it just happened through relationships and opportunities that were provided to me that I said yes and decided to take a risk. And so I think you can take risks here. People support that. They want people to be engaged in the community, helping to make it a better place for everybody. So I do think Indianapolis and our state is really special.
How would you assess kind of the future, if you will, for Indianapolis? As you mentioned, the Fairbanks Foundation does work around the state, but a lot of it focused right here in Indianapolis and central Indiana. As you look at, you know, a lot of change downtown, multiple billions of dollars of projects are either underway or are in the pipeline. A lot of people are saying, hey, this can be a transformational time. You look at initiatives like you're talking about with the apprenticeships, the companies, the different kinds of industries moving in. How would you assess Indiana's kind of competitive position and what the next 5, 10, 15 years might look like here?
I think like any other city and state, we've got no end of challenges, but we also have fantastic leadership and opportunities. And it does feel like there has been an alignment across multiple sectors that make this a really exciting time to be living and working in Indianapolis and the rest of our state. You mentioned the new IU and Purdue campuses split. There's lots of economic opportunity and investment. So I think we're on a great trajectory. There's lots of great people here. And hopefully through this apprenticeship initiative, if we can scale it, we get even more talent, better equipped to help us figure out how to solve some of the challenges that we're facing as a city and a state and take advantage of all these great opportunities that we have available here.
Yeah, one more question for you. And you mentioned the new IU and Purdue Indianapolis and what that might be. You're an education person. What's your take on that? I mean, there are a number of people who look at that. Again, transformational gets overused a lot, but a lot of people think this can be transformational for Indianapolis, for the business community here in central Indiana and beyond. What's your take?
Yeah, I think we have two excellent leaders at the helm at IU and at Purdue. And I think that they're both visionaries. And of course, this vision happened under prior leadership in the case of Purdue. But I think that there is a real desire to take Indianapolis and each of those campuses to the next level. So I think it's an incredibly exciting time for Indianapolis and really the rest of the state. It's going to benefit. We'll attract more people here. And then hopefully if we do our job with this apprenticeship initiative, we make this a really exciting place where people want to stay after they graduate from Purdue and IU and continue their career.
Claire Fittigan Green is the CEO of the Richard M. Fairbanks Foundation. Claire, it has been a real treat to catch up with you and really exciting to hear about this CEMET's iLab initiative, the apprenticeship initiative here in Indiana. Look forward to watching it unfold.
Thank you so much, Gary. Really appreciate your interest in the topic.
All right. And thank you for joining us on this edition, this episode of the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. It's a weekly conversation with achievers in business, sports, entertainment, and beyond. And you can download all of our episodes and also get Indiana Business News 24/7. All you have to do is go to InsideIndianaBusiness.com. I'm Gary Dick. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.